Hey, Tony, I like video brains.
Well, hey there, Jake. I like brains. I mean, video games too.
And this is a spooky new episode of Hey, I Like That Game.
I believe you mean Hey, I Like That Spooky Game.
The classic voice distortion.
Yes.
Demonic Tony. Or did you just get taken over? The Exorcist Believers 2. Podcasters get possessed.
It is really a Hey, I Like That Spooky tradition for me to be possessed by some sort of evil demonic presence as a tradition. How you doing, Jake?
I'm doing so-so, a little dragged down by life lately. So I haven't been playing too many games other than of course Amnesia. So one I played, I had on my Steam wishlist for a while and was kind of waiting for a good enough sale to get it, is I picked up Sifu and started playing that. So Sifu is sort of, I guess, like a beat-em-up, like a deeper beat-em-up, kind of like super hard in like a Dark Souls kind of way. It's got like kind of like the Batman, Spider-Man, like attack, counter sort of system to it. But there's, you know, special moves, like specific types of counters or dodges you need to do. So it's got like a little bit of like that, like fighting game feeling to it as well. It's really like, really great. I love the feel of it. It's like a very, I guess I would say, elevated beat 'em up. And beat 'em up as a genre, I think, is pretty neat, but is always brought down by how shallow they end up feeling over the course of, you know, like the usual, like maybe 1 hour play time of it. But like, yeah, the added depth, the added mechanics, you know, more than just like entering combos, like there's command inputs, all the specific dodges you need to do, like watch the animations of the attacks coming at you. It's not just like a single button counter. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I haven't played too much of it yet. But you know what I've gotten into, I really enjoy.
You're burying one of the leads of the game too, is that like it is like quote unquote run based. When you die,
yeah,
you like replay sections, but your character physically gets older. So you go from like young buck kung fu master to like decrepit master with like a long Fu Manchu beard, you know, like they do the whole thing.
And then it's like you start age 20, you can age up basically into your 70s. Like once you passed 70, like your next death is the death, and like every decade your health goes down but your damage goes up. And it's like you get knocked down, it adds 1 year, and then I think if you like kill the guy who downed you, the counter resets. But if you die again, it goes up by 2 years. So you, like, if you have a bad like series of runs, like it really like adds the age on pretty rapidly. So it is like, yeah, fairly run based. Like the levels are pretty short. Like to beat the first like true level was like maybe like a 30-minute run through. Then I've bashed my head against the wall for the second level, the nightclub. That's how I know you can age very rapidly if you have a bad streak. And my worst gaming habit of just, I love pressing buttons, doesn't work great for Sifu as well. That's why I always struggle with fighting games, is I'm just always, I just always want to do something. Like I'm always pressing buttons. I'm always like throwing out combos. So I get hit way too often. I can't play that absent-mindedly for Sifu. It's cool. It's like a great feel to the combat. It is very like demands your attention in the same way that a Dark Souls does. But it, like when it strings together, when you're doing the right dodges, when you're getting the counters in, you know, you do the command input to like hit the trips or like the pushbacks. It feels really good. It's that great combat flow that you get in the like Arkham games and in Spider-Man. That's like, I just love the way that combat can feel, where it's like an uninterrupted streak of just hits, counter hits, dodges, and you really can go into a flow as long as you're paying attention, because it's kind of like Sekiro where you have a posture meter. So if you're just blocking stuff, you know, you're going to build that up, and then you'll get stunned, blocked if you end up breaking your posture. So it's deep. There's a lot to think about. And it's really cool. It's just like elevated beat 'em up, I guess, is what I'd call it. And want to dig into that some more. And then with Drea, she's watching me play BioShock 2 right now. Nice. So you've played BioShock 2, right?
No, I've only played first one in Infinite.
Okay. Yeah, because we played the first one for the podcast way back when. Mm-hmm. And I remember because I loved BioShock, so I picked up BioShock 2 when it came out when I was younger. And I like it because it the one thing I kind of hate the most about BioShock 1, other than the last level and like boss being pretty garbage, is it does not feel good to have to like switch between guns and plasmids. And in 2, you're basically like dual wielding at all times. You got one plasmid out and you got one gun out, and that like that game feel is a lot better. The combat's a lot more kind of like seafood, like it flows together more. Like you're not stopping, stuttering, switching from one thing to another all the time. So like I really, really like that. Like it feels good to play and still got like the cool Rapture atmosphere. I know people hated it when it came out. Like BioShock 2 was kind of reviled. I can't even like really remember why. It is like the story is, you know, different. It's because it's after the events of BioShock 1. So Andrew Ryan is dead, and there's like a new. It's basically like dark Bernie Sanders has taken over. Like somebody who like talks about like the collective and like, you know, living for each other. Don't like live that like selfish lifestyle that Andrew Ryan wants, but like what if that person was like also like an authoritarian like dictator?
Right.
And I think it's like maybe that's what like annoyed people. I don't always pay great attention to like the stories of games, especially when it's like built up through like the audio logs. Like I'll listen to them and like the moments will hit me, but you know, as a collective like narrative and statement, I don't always like get that out of games so much as I like will a movie or something like that, because I think I'm always so plugged into the mechanics of it that those sorts of things just kind of go over my head, or I don't pay enough attention to them to really engage with them super super deeply. I don't know. Like I just always remember like BioShock 2 having just a huge like a bad rap, people not liking it, but I don't know. It plays fun, and you know, still a shitty person being a good villain in the underwater city is fun. So yeah. I haven't finished it. Like halfway through the construction of some of the levels feels, I don't know, it's like it's sort of like in Gears of War when you walk into a room and there's a bunch of chest high walls, you know exactly what's gonna happen. There's a lot of vibes of that in BioShock 2, which is like, okay, yeah, there's like a security camera over there and a turret over here, so this is going to be a combat arena. Like, I know that for sure. And it's not as, I feel like the exploring of the open world in BioShock 1 is more deep, is more engaging than BioShock 2, which definitely feels more combat focused than that, like, I don't know. I don't want to say immersive sim, because BioShock's not really an immersive sim in the same way that the other shocks are. Mm-hmm. But it has that, it does that, it like loses that spirit more in 2 than in 1. But I don't know. It's fun. I like playing it.
Yeah. That one has the big sisters in it too, which are like, they're like more speedy, right? Whereas like the hulking big brothers, you know, giants, the
big daddies. Sisters.
Yeah, the big daddies, that's it. The big daddies. Those are like hulking monstrosities, whereas the big sisters are like kind of spindly and spooky looking, right?
Yeah, they jump around. They'll use their own plasmids. I don't love those combat encounters too much. So what happens is you, since you play as a big daddy in BioShock 2, you can get a big sister, or a little sister, though like girls that make Adam by defeating another Big Daddy and then, like, basically stealing their kid. And then they can collect Adam from, like, specific corpses. And that's where those kind of telegraphed battle arenas definitely come in, because it's, like, then you defend the little sister as she's gathering Adam. Then once you basically have completed all those encounters you can in an area, then the big sister will come and get you. But it's there's, like, a build-up to it. So it's, like, you send the last little sister into the vent, and then it's, like, you got, like, 30 seconds or so before the big sister shows up, so you can really prepare the arena. Cool. And it's nice, but it just, like, then it's – I don't know. It kind of trivializes those encounters more, because there are a lot of, like, traps, a lot of setups you can do with the alternative weapon fire – alternative ammo types and the plasmids. So it's I don't know. Like, there's not as much you need to do when it's just like, okay, I've just, like, basically set up a constant stun with, like, the cyclone traps. And, like, I've already taken about half their health away before they even get to me with, like, the trap rivets you can set up. And then it's just a matter of, you know, exchange fire until their health bar drains faster than yours does. And, I mean, that's me maybe playing the game wrong. But the big sisters are just, it's something that, like, seems in concept cooler than it ends up being. Ah. In the same way, I think in Bioshock 1, the Big Daddies, like, those fights end up being not as much fun by the end, because it's like, okay, you've done it so many times, and the like build up and that, like, bombast of the first encounter you have, and, like, how much, like, the Big Daddies in 1 and Big Sisters in 2 are built up, like, they kind of end up being a bit more of a drag by the time you're more into the playthrough. But, like I said, could be playing it wrong. I play a lot of video games wrong, like fighting games. I always pressing buttons.
You're not playing it wrong.
Well, I know that you never play games wrong, Tony. So what are you playing right?
Oh, I play a lot of games wrong. Holy hell. Let's see. One that I play wrong, but I love so much. It's called Windjammers 2, Jake. Windjammers 2 got DLC. A free DLC patch went out a couple weeks ago now. Added two new characters, which are, like, pretty fun. Like, one kind of, like, an average, like, middle-of-the-road character, and another speed or power character, like, heavier weight character. Mm-hmm. They're both pretty fun, interesting new specials. They added some new tutorials to the game as well to try to teach some of the more advanced mechanics, which I appreciated. I still want to go through them a little bit and kind of see how well they translate those lessons. But, you know, good on them for adding that stuff. And then more importantly, they added crossplay. So all the folks playing Windjammers 2, regardless of platform, get into the same hopper. There's still not that many people, if I'm being honest, but that game continues to be an awesome time. I love it. So Windjammers 2, baby. I want to get some more games in soon. Game rocks.
I mean, we'll be able to get in a few games probably for the charity stream.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. We'll play a little bit there. Okay. Other stuff I've been playing. These two are, like, kind of the bigger chunk ones. So let's start with one that we've kind of talked about a little bit already, which is Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon.
Tell me all about it.
So, yeah, we talked about it a little bit in our last episode. Mason had mentioned it. Since then, I have played the game all the way through. I've seen credits. I have not gone back and did all the alternate fights to get all the different endings. But I have done seemingly the hardest stuff in it. The ending that I initially went for apparently was the hardest one. So that's fun. But anyways, it's really fun. I find it to be a breath of fresh air from the way that many of other FromSoft games have been structured as of late. But the combat, the attention to detail, and kind of the intrigue of how the story is told through both, dialogue, cutscenes, text, and combat are all, like, you know, hallmarks of FromSoft's design all comes through well in this game. Definitely like a return to form for this series because it has been up and down over the years. Like I have loved some of the games in the past, but not all of them. This one is like probably the best one from what I can tell. It's technically very impressive. Like the graphics are insane. It's a giant mech fighting like action game, so there's a ton of different effects and crazy animations on these, you know, mech suits and like really high intensity action. Like you're moving really fast in the fast suits, so it's like I was expecting performance to be something that would be like, I don't know, I wasn't expecting it to be bad performance wise, but like FromSoft games on PC have not always had the history of like running incredibly solid. So I was like, okay, I want to like make sure I keep an eye on that element of this game. And man, it performs really well. Frame rate has been incredibly solid for me. I turned on like HDR and all the other like cool effects that my monitor can do and that my graphics card is able to handle. And I was repeatedly just... you know, it's awe-inspiring at times, like how good the game looks, you know, and how just crisp the animations are. Like these mech suits look great. The fact that, you know, Armored Core, like I said, is like a mech suit action game. But like, it's like you get customization tools like on the level of like a Gran Turismo or like a... what's the Xbox racing game that I'm forgetting right now? Forza.
Forza.
Yeah, it's like tuner culture, but with this like crazy mech suit.
Yeah,
like you can change out every single part on the mech suit, like its arms, all the different weapon, legs, head, chest piece. You can change out AI systems on the inside to give your targeting computers better like auto tracking at different ranges and like specialize in different things, you know. You can add in different types of batteries that give you like different different types of like energy distributions. Like, okay, if you're trying to be really lightweight but go high energy, so you can use like beam weapons, there's like a battery for that, or that is like better suited for those things. But like, at the end of the day, you can tinker. You can tinker a ton. Mm-hmm. There are so many different parts. There is so much you can do to customize. On top of every single part in the game, you can do different coloring and shadings and like to every single component on your suit. So, you know, the community has made a bunch of awesome, like every single Gundam you can think of and all the Evangelion suits, like people have been making that stuff and coloring them appropriately and doing a bunch of cool, you know, stuff with that, which I love, you know, I love that.
Yeah.
But because of the amount of component pieces and different builds that are possible, like there's a lot of different ways you can play the game. The single player is set up in a way of you have, I think there's like six chapters overall. Within each chapter, there are various missions. Some of those missions are like, hey, go here, do a string of different objectives that like build upon each other. Others are like, hey, go here and destroy this ace pilot or this facility. So some of them will be like longer engagements. That'll be like, I don't know, a mission could take like 20 minutes, you know, from end to end. But some of them are like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, like much shorter experiences. And there's just a lot of variability in the things that you're doing, you know. There's also decision points within this, like within the game, within the story. Like you decide to help this one corporation or this one corporation, or you decide to help this person over this person, that kind of thing, which the game doesn't do a great job communicating because it's not the type of thing where it's not a choice that happens in the mission. It's a choice that happens when you are picking from a list of missions. You can either pick this one or this one, and it's not it's not visualized very clear in that. So sometimes people can get frustrated with some of the choices that they're making, or not even realizing they're making a choice. But anyways, the all of that mission structure and the way that you move from like combat encounter to combat encounter is really nice. It intersplices with those missions, you know, a pretty intriguing story. They set up this world in which the fires of Ibis have happened, which there is this magical fuel, basically, you know, like like unobtainium, right? Like, here is this material that everybody is after called coral. In the past, these coral reserves like lit on fire and like nuked this planet, basically. But people are still after that coral. So the story is more about like you're a mercenary, literally like a nameless genetic like a mutated soldier, basically, like genetically enhanced, I should say, more than mutated. But like you're just like some no-name soldier. Mm-hmm. You find a downed mech suit's identity and you just steal that identity and become a mech pilot, basically. And you are taking missions for these two different corporations, one that is kind of highbrow society and the other is more like the working man militaristic arm. And then there's also like a rebel group that is like the Rubiconians, like the people of the planet that are like fighting against these corporations that as they like destroy their homes, you know? So there's a bunch of counterplay between these different factions, but for the majority of the story, you're just this like you're a mercenary. You're just kind of doing whatever they tell you to do. Because you're just a hired gun. So there'll be times where like missions going back and forth, it feels like, and maybe this isn't exactly how the story plays out, but it feels like one mission, it's like, go to this location, go to the wall and destroy all this stuff. Because the enemy is trying to do that. And then the next mission is, man, the enemy came through here and destroyed all this stuff on the wall. You got to help us like do this thing. And it's like, I was both I'm doing both of these things. So I always found that to be kind of funny here, but it does kind of thrust you towards the end of the game to like make some actual choices between these different forces. But it's like you could also play this entire game and ignore all of that stuff. I thought it was like interesting, but not like incredibly compelling. But like in typical FromSoft fashion, these levels are like chocked full of like detail and like secrets. There's a lot of replayability in these missions to go back and find like either hidden like treasure chests that have parts in them or alternate routes that you could go on where you could get into different fights. And it's kind of like it's almost like a Star Fox 64 level where it's like, okay, if I decide to go down this bridge instead of up over here, I'm going to fight this boss. But if I do this, I'll fight this boss kind of all within like one level itself. I have not played the multiplayer, but it does have like 3-on-3 multiplayer, which could be a ton of fun. But really the thing that this game does incredibly well and the way that I played it and had the most fun with it was the arena. So the arena is just like a single player part where there's like multiple levels and classes and it's just one-on-one mech fights. So you're fighting against individual mech pilots that have tons of different thematic builds to it. Some of these builds are characters in the game that are like a part of the story in some way. Some of them aren't and are just like whoever, but they all have these little bios that you can go read like, oh, this person's a construction worker that talks a lot of shit and likes to get into fights. all up until like, oh, this is like the lead general of XYZ Army, you know, like that kind of stuff. And that allowed me to play out my dreams of being, you know, the crack ace pilot grinding up the ranks of whatever in his Gundam suit. You know, my headcanon was all like that stuff. You know, I'm a new type pilot trying to make my way up the Gundam arena ranks. And it was great for that. And it like, there are so many different parts and components. I had so much fun building all these different types of builds. Like, I usually don't play a heavy suit, but I decided to make one in this, and I had a great time like customizing it. Like, the suit that I played for 99% of the game was like a lightweight, super fast, high damage, like intensity, like big laser sword. Also, like, I'm just going to stagger you with these like big hits and then like blow you up in a couple of seconds, that kind of thing. Like, more like a glass cannon, but like, you can't hit me, that kind of thing, you know, which was difficult to play against a lot of bosses, because some of these bosses have like giant health bars and I have to play perfectly to make it through, because if I get hit once, they're going to like decimate me because I'm a lightweight suit. So like, I had to pull out beefier builds for some fights, but a majority of the time in all of the arena, I was able to beat with like my speedy build. But yeah, it's really dope. It's a really, really cool game for sure.
It sounds super neat. I never, you know, Armored Core was never on my radar. Like, never played any of the other games. But I mean, it's small but passionate fan base for sure. And how much you like have loved Armored Core, and how much like how good this one sounds. I watched you play a little bit. He's like, we're streaming some on Discord after one of your arena battles. She's like, oh yeah, this actually looks pretty fucking rad, like wild.
It's pretty rad. It really does a good job of giving you this like sense of piloting this suit in like high stakes dog fighting, you know, because that's what it is. It's like you're trying to outthink and outmaneuver your opponent to line them up for the perfect shot that's gonna, you know, wreck them, because you're not going to be able to hit them with every single shot. They're too fast, you know. So it's really neat. It's really, really neat. But yeah, Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon, definitely worth checking out, regardless of what fandom you come from that gets the, you know, whether it's FromSoft fandom, Giant Robots fandom, just check it out. It's cool.
No matter what, big robots are awesome.
Yeah, right? Like, I have, like, playing through that game just reminded me how much, like, man, I really love, like, some of those old school Gundam series. I used to watch that stuff all the time as a kid, and I still really like it. You know, like, I went down this rabbit hole of looking up stuff about Amuro, who is, like, the original Gundam protag, who is, like, I really like that character. And, like, I was, like, reading all the backstories and all the movies and stuff about the character from playing this game, just because it's like, oh, yeah, this shit's so cool. I should get back into it. But anyways, Armored Core 6, very good. Last game I want to talk about is this thing kind of came out of nowhere. I randomly found this game on the Switch eShop. So I tried to spend once a month, like, at least an hour of my time looking at different storefronts, just like digging through the crates, you know, what kind of stuff have come out that I should like look at or whatever. Because, you know, no outlet is able to cover everything. So I found this really weird, small niche game that I am in love with. It is called Warriors of the Nile 2. So it's similar to Lost in Fontaland. But it's not a deck builder. So what I mean by that is it is a grid-based tactics game that takes place on like a grid board, and you are moving these pieces around the grid board in a like tactics game-like fashion. But instead of it being a deck builder like Lost in Fontaineland is, this is a unit item upgrade-based system. You will have three heroes that you bring into every game. Within those three heroes, it's like you have a tank, a ranged DPS, and then like – or not – I guess it's like you have like tank, DPS, and then like caster. And within those three classes, there are four subclasses that kind of augment them in different ways. So like, for instance – for your tank, you have a tank that's like specializes in shields. You have a tank that specializes in like multi-hits, like swinging multiple times and jacking that up. And then you also have like a tank that is more about rush down, like rushing to an enemy line and like killing a bunch of things with like big one-shot hits. So there's like a ton of variation in the types of units that you can put out there. But the way that the game builds in its roguelite fashion, as I always tend to love, is you move from stage to stage in a linear fashion, like, you know, Slay the Spire, like so many typical roguelites. You get to pick from anywhere between like one choice to three different choices after each stage. You either go through a combat with certain rewards, or you'll go to a certain shop. You know, like I can go to the blacksmith versus going to the accessory store that sell different stuff depending on like what you're looking for. There are also a couple different vectors for like upgrading your units. You know, they all have stats associated with them, but you also have, you know, this like growing pyramid of upgrades that you can contribute to throughout the run that like cost like money and another resource. But sometimes those are like big power swings and sometimes they apply to multiple heroes. And then there are also per like unit upgrades as well. Every combat that you go through, you'll get like an upgrade, which you'll get three different tablets, one for each character class. They're random what gets, you know, assigned or whatever you like earn there, but you pick those and that's how you kind of grow your character's strength. And those can be anywhere from like, oh, just like stat upgrades. I upgraded like my hit points and my attack boost to stuff like when you land a critical hit, summon a lion that will attack an enemy, you know, like stuff like that. So it's like wide ranging effects, wide ranging things that you can manipulate to stack on top each other and synergize together to do like crazy broken builds. It's like right up my alley, but the game doesn't look like much. Like it looks like a very, it looks like almost like a mobile game or like a flash game from back in the day. Like it really, the art style is very simplistic. The sprites are very minimal in their styling, and everything is veiled in this like ancient Egyptian thematic. That's what it's like really leaning into. It's like, the Egyptians versus the Romans. That's kind of the struggle and the conflict. So many of your enemies will be like Roman soldiers, that kind of thing. I find it to be incredibly fun and very the perfect kind of game to kind of have on in the background, and you can like pick up and play it, right? Like you can do a couple of turns here or there, or do a couple of combats in a row. They're fairly fast. Like the boards play pretty quick. So, you know, you can jump in and out of a run quickly. It has like a really nice balance between like metagame progressions outside of the run, because like you're building a city up, and as you build up your city, you'll get, you know, new heroes will unlock, new storefronts will unlock like during your runs, and then you'll like upgrade those things, and you'll get like standard boosts and things like that. Each hero type also has like a tree, like a skill tree to level up on too. So there's like so many different things that keep you playing the game progression wise. And then like the gameplay itself is like simple to pick up, hard to master kind of stuff. And yeah, it's really, really cool. I like it a lot. One of these things that I was not expecting to like it nearly as much as I am. And again, very unassuming game. I don't even know why this one stuck out to me to the point where I want to like look at it, but I'm really glad I did. It's called Warriors of the Nile 2. I've been playing it on Switch, which I find it to be like a really good portable game, but it looks like it's on Steam as well. So if you have a Steam Deck, it, you know, then it's still portable, but Yeah, it's dope. I think it's really, really cool. So if you're into like grid-based tactics game, if you're into roguelikes, check this one out. Faux show.
Love a portable roguelike.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I'm telling you, it's a game that doesn't look like much, but I was having a great time with it. Like, between that game and Lost in Fontaland, like, I feel like I have found two of, like, my favorite types of games where, like, I'm just going to have those games installed all the time. You know, like, I can boot it up and do a run and get a lot of satisfaction out of it right away in that, like, turn-based tactics fashion. And both of them hit a lot of the same beats that I like a lot in different ways. Like the difference between like a game that's like rooted in a deck builder versus a game that's like rooted more in like momentum and like building your character up and like progression. The subtle differences are, I'm loving them. I'm absolutely loving it. So yeah. Words of the Nile 2, check it out, folks.
Sounds like some neat games.
Yeah, dude, it's cool. It's cool. And like the one thing I will also say about Warriors of the Nile is that like it spaces out its like upgrades, like its gameplay relevant upgrades, in like a really nice drip feed. Like you don't unlock all of the different like heroes, like the classes. You don't unlock those like all at once. You kind of get them a little bit over time. It takes like maybe two or three runs to build up the currency to get like the next one, which gives you enough time to like try each one out a little bit and figure out what combinations you like. And then once you unlock all of that, then there's like, oh, now there's like a mutation version. So it's like an alternate version that you can unlock that will be like, hey, the same core concept of this archetype, but here's just a different flavor of it. And then the very last section of heroes that you can upgrade or unlock, I should say, are the playable characters from Warriors of the Nile 1, which seemed to be like a proof of concept for all the systems in this game. And this one is just like a boatload more content. But I thought that was really neat that they brought like the original characters back in and made them like the hardest to unlock characters and made them seem like they are incredibly powerful. You know, like they're like the original gods in this universe. And like you're the characters you're playing through in this game are like the junior versions of them. So it's like, it was actually really neat. I really liked how they did that. But anyways, I'm rambling a lot about Warriors of the Nile too. And we still have a really big and scary game to talk about here, Jake.
Yeah, we do. What's it called?
I don't remember exactly what it's called.
Well, when we get back from the break, hopefully we'll remember that we're talking about Amnesia: The Dark Descent.
That's a good transition. Great transition.
Hey everybody, we hope that you'll be joining us for the Hey I Like That Game charity stream on November 18th, starting at noon Pacific Standard Time. We'll be raising money for NAMI, playing some fun games, and giving away prizes. Hope to see you there.
And we're back, Jake! We're back, and we're talking about Amnesia: The Dark Descent. I'm glad I wrote that down because I was forgetting what the name of this game was.
Can never remember anything.
I'm glad I wrote down all these notes.
My head, if it wasn't attached to my shoulders.
So, Jake, this is your pick for Hey, I Like That Spooky Game this year. This is a survival horror adventure game made by Fractional Games, released in 2010, and has had several re-releases since then, but its original release 2010 for PC, and then mm-hmm. it has since came to basically all the consoles. Yeah. So why'd you pick this one, Jake?
This game was huge. It was like a big internet phenomenon when it came out. Like, I think it basically what made PewDiePie famous is like he did a big old screamy playthrough of this and people loved it. And I don't know, the nostalgia critic of the 2010s was born. And more, I guess, like internet effect. But it's like I remember, like, I think I'd like watched a playthrough around that time. Not his playthrough. Anyway, that's all completely unrelated. So, like, it has been on my radar since it came out. So sort of a stealth request from my wife, because she had been talking about it for the past, like, few years. Like, oh, did you ever play Amnesia? Like, you should play it so I can watch you play it. Needed a spooky game. This is one I never wanted to play and was never going to play unless we had like do it for the podcast. Just not really my genre, the I guess like horror where you can't fight back. I had always been curious about this game. I think it's a really neat, I guess, like this game's held together by duct tape. It's very indie, like obviously a labor of love and like detailed, but kind of like a bare bones sort of game engine. So it's just like I wanted to finally play it, and I wanted to make you play it too.
Yeah, you want to share in this this whole thing together. Thanks, Drea, for the recommendation. Another solid rec from Drea. I had never played this game before either. Mm-hmm. I am not one to really follow YouTubers or be like much for consuming content on the internet like that. I had known that this was like a game that the internet had a lot of feelings about, but like I had never known too much about it. All I really knew was that it was like a survival horror adventure game, which those combination of genres and adjectives usually don't mean much for me. In terms of my interests. So yeah, kind of like what you said, never had any interest in playing this game because of that. But I'm really glad that we did play this because it's neat. Like, it was a very neat game. It's a first-person adventure game, right? That's ultimately my nightmare. I don't like point-and-click adventure games. I really, really don't like that. Like, this game reminded me a lot of Myst. Like, when we were playing it initially, and maybe, like, what the concept I had built in my head initially was, like, Myst. Myst for me is a game where like I didn't really understand a lot of the puzzles without cheating. It was just a little bit obtuse to me when I was like a young kid playing it for the first time. But like it was a cool looking puzzle box that I really didn't interact with. You know, it was mm-hmm. the type of thing where I'd play the game, walk around. Hey, this looks cool. This looks really interesting. I guess I'll just look up the solution so at least like get going in the mechanics and gameplay. But I just like could not figure that game out really when I was a kid, and it was never something I wanted to like return to as an adult. So I had this like similar impression about this game outside looking in. But one of the things that I really started to appreciate about this game that I never had the appreciation of like playing a game like Myst is that a lot of these puzzles made like logical sense to me, unlike a lot of like puzzle game or adventure games I've played. Like, for example, when you're mixing those like chemicals for the first time, right? Like, the clues that you're finding are very clearly telling you, like, you need to go pick up these chemicals. The voiceover like gives you those hints. There is a mementos like menu that will tell you like, hey, you're looking for these things. So it's like, even if you don't get it from the clues, like the game will remind you of that. It doesn't tell you like exactly where to find these things. It just kind of loosely points you in those directions. And like combining them together. So often in adventure games, you have to do these like interactions between the items in your inventory and things in the world. And it isn't always instantly clear like what interactions work together and really what things you can interact with in the game world itself. But this game, like in the way it designed so many of its puzzles, it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. You put the chemicals in the, you know, Bunsen burner things, and you turn the cranks to turn on the fire, right? Or you drop the acid on the lock, and then you hit it with a hammer to break it. You know, like those flows make sense to me. Whereas, you know, not to throw any shade, but if you go back and play some like classic LucasArts adventure games, there's a lot of times that those like items and those like type of solutions don't make much sense. And it comes down to, I just have to guess some of these items to make this thing work. And I never felt like I had to do that in this game, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Or like I had like how the mementos system works, where it's like, as you like uncover notes about like, you know, like for the chemicals example, like you talked about, like there's a note in the lab that explains like, oh, the chemicals aren't here, we had to move them to a different location, like they're in the wine cellar. So like, you know, points you in that direction, then your mementos is updated at that point. Like once you've like, I guess like diegetically gotten a clue of what you need to do, that's when it fills in that like quest log a bit more, which I like. Everything is I guess diegetic in this, like all the interacting with stuff, like the puzzles, you're not like going into a separate menu, except I guess there is like the menuing if you're like combining items, but a lot of it takes place in the game world with the game physics, which is cool, which is like, you know, spooky because you're working on this, you're focusing on something else, and there might be a scary monster around the corner.
Yeah. And you, I didn't want to jump to this right away, but you mentioned, so I want to get into it now. Like, you had mentioned the physics. And one of the things that I typically don't like about, you know, usually adventure games, and usually quite often survival horror games, are the physics. Because in a lot of these types of games, movement and interaction are more like black and white, linear, or like non-dynamic. Maybe they don't feel good. Maybe they're purposely obtuse or muddied because like that's part of the genre, like survival horror, right? Part of the fear-inducing moments in the original Resident Evil, right, come from your character moving like shit, you know, like the tank controls, like some of that, like the anxiety, that fear is induced by like you aren't super graceful in those games. And I hated that about those games. You know, like I did not like that the action elements of survival horror pre RE4 didn't feel great to me, because it's like, you know, it feels like you're artificially making me afraid because like this character moves like dog shit, you know? Whereas this game is not like that. I feel like your character moves effectively in both a run and a walk, can jump effectively, and can like maneuver up on top of obstacles like you really need to do as a part of this game. You can do all that stuff very well. And then you can manipulate objects in the game world in like, I wouldn't say simplistic, I would say like medium level of interaction. For instance, like pulling on a drawer, it's not like you're just saying, grab the drawer, press a button, and then the drawer opens. You need to grab the drawer and move back the control stick or move back the mouse to pull it, right? So like there is this feel of a lot of times of like when you grab and interact with something, you have to like think about the motion of your arm, or like the way the hinge and the door is going to move, you know, or how I would throw this box. You have to think about the how you interact with the things in the world. And I feel like that is something really simple. And like they do it all over this game, and it doesn't feel like it's an overbearing effect, and it doesn't feel like it's like a magic trick either, but it's like something very simple that like brought me into the game world a little bit more, you know, having to frantically open up the drawers and things like that, and not having it be this like neat point and click type thing. Like, I actually really liked that I had to like fight it a little bit, you know?
Yeah. I think so before we get like too far into like all that stuff. So the setup of this game is you like wake up in this castle, and you have purposefully given yourself amnesia. Like, you drank you roofied yourself essentially. So you like forget kind of what's going on and who you are, other than like, you know, your name's Daniel. And then as you like first like go into explore, you find a note to yourself from yourself. Yes. Where it's like, hey, this is your name. I gave me amnesia because I needed to forget the stuff I did. And I hope that you still hate Alexander because you need to kill him. By the way, there's a dark presence pursuing you, and it's probably going to try to kill you. Good luck.
Yeah.
And then you're pushed off in the world. Yep. So I think it's a pretty, snappy and effective opening, and it, you know, allows the intrigue of like what's going on in the castle, like who is Alexander and why do we want to kill him, and yes, also who am I. So it's, I know amnesia is like a pretty easy trick for stories to use in order to like have that exposition delivered or like discovered in a way that's natural. But since it's just the entire premise, it's the fucking title of the game, it doesn't feel as contrived in this situation.
Yeah, exactly. It does a really good job of like setting things up right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that it sets up early and like leans into is its unusual setting. So this game takes place in 1839 in like Prussia. So like definitely a different period of history that, one, we don't see a lot of video games in, and two, like, don't spend a lot of like, at least I haven't spent a lot of my like time learning history about like this era of time, these people, these locations, you know, this stuff. So like I find it to be really unique in that way, where it feels like alien in some ways, and this like this blur of like reality and in fiction kind of. It kind of lends this time period and these like locations lend itself to kind of a spookiness, you know.
Yeah, everything's like kind of like chunky. It's like recognizable, but like all the like mechanisms, like there's a sequence where like you're repairing an elevator, and like all the like mechanical things are like, you know, big gigantic gears and like coal powered and like stuff that you can kind of understand how it works and how you're supposed to like interact with the puzzle to get it fixed. The people are shitty and racist in a way that like is appropriate for the time period too, and like, yep, builds up the intrigue of just like, oh yeah, I think I do want to kill this person. And like, oh no, does my guy suck too?
yeah, exactly. By the time we get to the end of this game, I'm just like looking at my notes. It's like, I don't like any of these people. Like anybody here. There's nobody. It's like last bit of the game where you're going through all the torture chambers. It's rough. It's very sad. Like, it's, you know, not to jump ahead too far to like the ending of this game, but like, there's some kind of semi-shocking things that happen. It's like, oh, everybody here sucks. Mm-hmm. Nobody here is clean. But it builds up to it well because you're discovering
like what's going on, learning what the darkness is, like, you know, how you, I guess, got infected by it, for lack of a better term, and like what it does, and like people around Daniel just like keep dying, keep getting killed by this presence that's pursuing him. So he's freaked out. He wants to find some way to cure him. And then Alexander basically like offers him a lifeline. but you know, it's sort of a deal with the devil, because like Alexander's got his own motives and like what's needed to be done to rid yourself of the presence ain't super kosher. There's torture involved.
Yeah, it's a lot. It becomes a lot. But one of the things that we haven't talked about with this game so far that like kind of leans into everything in this game is, you know, this shadow that is following you, you know, this demon, right? Mm-hmm. You know it this entire time, and it makes you afraid, you know, like fear, insanity is like a core aspect of this game. Like you said earlier, Jake, you are not able to fight back really against this monster. You are a weak little flesh bag, and this monster is going to kill you. So you have to run. You have to run. You have to escape it, but you cannot fight it. Mm-hmm. A lot of this game happens in the dark. The darkness, like the interplay of darkness and light, is a core mechanic of the game. You are given a lantern that you can light your way to see a little bit better. You are also given little tinder pouches that you can light candles and other things throughout the game world, which is like kind of a core mechanic of the game. But really, part of the game is when you are in the dark, you become afraid. And you start to lose your sense of the world. You become more insane. And the way that the game like visualizes that is by like blurring your vision, swaying the camera back and forth, you know, making you hear things that are not normally there, you know, doing a lot of spooky things to make it very apparent that you should not be in the dark, that you should be trying to keep the light around you at all times.
Sanity is a secondary health bar, pretty much.
Yes, yes, exactly. You cannot, you will, I never did this, and that's on me, but, like, is there a way to just, like, die from insanity if you're just, like, in darkness?
I never tried that. I went pretty close to insanity, so, like, you have, like, shows your, like, sanity health level by, like, your menu has a brain, and it like gets more like droopy the more insane you go, and there's like a little description of how you're feeling. So it's like crystal clear, my hands are shaking a little bit, like my pulse is pounding and like I'm sweating deeply, and then I got to the level where it's just like dot dot dot. Like that's how like close to insanity I was. Like bugs were crawling on my screen, like I was swaying and everything like that. But I never died from loss of sanity, I guess.
Yeah.
I died from loss of limbs and hit.
Right. We can get to that in a second. But yeah, it's really neat that's like a major element of the game, like kind of like a soft health bar, you know, that like leans into the horror of the situation you're in. You know, the Lovecraftian kind of horror that the game is trying to like kind of put forth for you.
That's definitely its biggest influence.
Yeah, definitely. So like the shadow is like attacking your sanity through that, but it is like actually attacking you too, right? So like there are elements of this game where this monster is literally behind you, around you, but you cannot see it. It is like an invisible force, or it's like slightly obscured. Usually you don't get a good clear picture of the monster. It's either like far in the distance in a shadow, or you just see a brief flash of it, which I think is like a very effective use of the monster, because it is not very scary when you actually like see it.
He's a little goofy looking.
Because like
got
this
a big
game,
old mouth.
Yeah, and this game is like low poly. Like it's not like a incredibly like high fidelity game in any sort of way. You know, it is definitely of a time, and it's an indie game of a time, you know? So it is, it is not a looker, right? But it uses the mechanics to freak you out. You know, it uses that monster very effectively.
And like, you can't look at it because it absolutely demolishes your sanity just to gaze upon the monsters.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Which is, It's okay. This is where I'm going to start being universally positive, because I don't know what's the best way of putting this. I wasn't so much scared by this game as I was stressed out by it.
Sure.
And the atmosphere is very very effective, very horrifying in and of itself. But in the mechanics of it, I sort of, I think I gamed it too much, where it's like there's not too much of a downside to dying. It got a pretty generous autosave feature. So there's this new area I'm going into, especially the sequence in the jail cells. I don't want to have to, map out where I am mentally, and it's kind of a bit more of a labyrinthian level. So it's just fuck it, I'm just running through. Lantern out, sprinting. Oh, there's a monster. Excuse me, I want to see what's in this room over here. So when I respawn, I have a bit more information. So I gamed it a little much at times when I was more frustrated by it than scared. And I don't know.
I agree, because I would do a lot of those same things, but I don't see that as a negative. I don't see that as a downside. I see that as how you kind of have to play this game because you don't have a map, because you don't, because it is very dangerous in certain locations. There are certain stretches of this game that are better than others, and I think the prison is probably one of the lower ends in my mind, because it was just so big and crisscrossy. I struggled with that piece. This is something that I hate about all games that are made in this fashion of hey, I miss a key item and I had no reason to know that I missed a key item and I wasn't on the optimum path. And now I need to circle back and find the next piece that I missed somehow, there's a section right after the elevator, or right before the elevator, that is that happened to me, where it's I had several components done for the elevator before I was even there, and then I got to a point where I was I needed this one specific thing, now I need to go all the way back to another area and get the
same thing happened to me,
right? And that, I hate that. I hate that. My god, that kind of stuff sucks. But without a robust map, you're gonna have a hard time doing that effectively, and it's that stinks, but whatever.
It's not a flaw of the game, because part of the horror. If you had a map, exactly, that's gonna make the game less scary. If you had it tracked exactly what items you needed, just inherently in the menu, other than you needing to, as Daniel, learn how much of the thing you need to get. That's gonna take some of the horror away. And it's not something that's wrong with the game. It's just something that causes me to be more stressed and annoyed than scared.
But can I say there are two mechanics in this game that I felt genuine horror, or genuine not, because I agree that sometimes it's more annoying than anything else, than it is shocking. But there are two things that happened in this game that were nice little horror bits for me. The first is the first time where you have the water portion with the monster, where you can't, if you're in the water, monster comes running at you. You can't see it. You can only see this the splashing in the water. And that was excellent. Absolutely excellent. And then combined with that, when you had to throw the bits of meat, flesh into the water for the monster to go get, so you can run under the door when it's opening, excellent. That was scary in all the best ways. Very, very effective. The other really effective part, and has been, maybe this isn't the first time it ever happened in a game, and I know a lot of games have done this since, but I thought it was incredibly effective in this game. The first time you had to hide from the monster by closing yourself in a cabinet, where the monster is outside the door, slamming it, going to break through and your only recourse is to get in a cabinet and shut the doors, and you can hear it outside the doorway. You can like you can damn near feel the breath on your neck while you are playing. It does like an incredible job making you feel very immersed in that moment. And yeah. The game tries to recreate that a lot of different times where you have to close the door and the monster like slams in the door and you see it breaking it. You know, it, like you have to do that a lot. But those first two times you do those specific things in the game, I really felt that scary feeling and like the fright that I felt when I had to run from the monster in the water, knowing it's right behind me. But I know this door is only going to be open for X amount of time. I just have to run. I can't just be on the boxes. It's going to take too long. I have to sprint for it. Like, excellent. Absolutely excellent.
Yeah. I think in the sewers, like when the monsters like just aren't the there's like a blade hands guy who comes after you, and there's a moment where you have to just like run. Like you can't hide. Like you need to get to the end of this hallway so you can get to the loading zone, which is the only safety is that monsters can't go through loading zones. But yeah, I was like running away. I clicked the door and I made it, and I was like, woo! Like let out like a little like yelp of relief like that. Like it's an emotionally evocative game.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we had said earlier, like there is like elements of this story where you are torturing like innocent people to extract like fear from them to make this, you know, whatever material. It ends up being like part of like a like there's like an alien race and there's a portal. Somebody got banished from there. Like the Baron Alexander is like some interdimensional fucking demon being. I don't know. It really goes off the rails towards the end there. But the last bits of the game where you're exploring those like torture chambers and getting all those like memories flooding back to Daniel and all this stuff, like it was really sad. And it was kind of rough seeing these like dirty, bloody torture devices all over and hearing these people, you know, scream in agony saying they're innocent and all this stuff. And like part of the story is that the Baron tells them that, or tells Daniel, these people are all bad people, you know, like whatever.
Arsonists, like rapists, stuff like that.
Right. But they're just innocents. These are just innocents people that they are torturing every day, then making them forget about that just so they can torture them more and make them more scared. Like it's kind of fucked up. And like I said, everyone here sucks.
Yeah. The brass bowl is what gets me the most. Like, oh man, that's like, oh.
Yeah. That whole, the bowl, fucking that whole scene was crazy.
So I'm
team shadow monster basically.
Right. Yeah. Come devour all our souls, please.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's effective again. It's like more stressed than scary. So like I'm playing through this game, you know, I think a lot about the horror games that I enjoy playing more, like especially like the Resident Evils, and like the part that like still scares me the most, and like the original Resident Evil Red Generator coming up, like even though I know like what you're supposed to do in that moment, and like mechanically there's no reason it should scare me because I know how to cope with the regenerator, but like that's still like to me the most fear inducing video game sequence. And I know like in Resident Evil Village, the Benevento household, where you have to give up all your weapons and kind of basically do a short amnesia run like in the middle of Resident Evil Village, like that part didn't really scare me. Because, like, once they take away your weapons, it's like, all right, I don't have to worry about combat now. Like, I don't have to, like, conquer the enemy. I have to avoid or hide from them. And I think the act of having to combat, like, the monsters, to defeat them, is I don't know, that scares me more than having to avoid them. Like, I think this Amnesia is a scarier game to watch than it is to play, because when I'm playing it, it's just like, all right, you know, avoid, hide. Like, there would be moments, like, especially in the jail, where it's like, well, okay, it spotted me, it's breaking down the door, I'm in a cell, there's nowhere I can go, so I'll just set down the controller and wait to get killed so I can respawn. Like, that's not as scary as, like, oh shit, I have to fight that monster. And that's the only thing I can do, is fight it. And, you know, I think it, you know, it's different for different people, what works on them, but, like, this game didn't really scare me that way, in the way that, like, Resident Evil can.
Interesting. That's interesting. Because, like, I honestly feel almost like the opposite, where the scary thing for me here is that I can't fight it, and I know I can't fight it. You know, like, I do not have the tools to fight this, because for me, I mean, we were kind of talking about it with AC6 of, like, I get a rush from, like, being the ace pilot, you know? And if you give me power that I can, like, execute to beat something, like, I get off on, like, that power fantasy and, like, crafting those skills and abilities to take down this challenge. But, man, it is so much scarier to me when I am just a frail human against this giant monster, and it's like, oh yeah, in reality, I wouldn't be able to fight back. I would have to run away. I would have to use my wits in some other way. That is, like, super duper scary and effective for me in this game, right? Like, I don't think every game could do it as well as this game. And I think that's why I've ultimately really enjoyed this one. Because, like, I could see these elements combining together to be something sour to me, but this was sweet, you know, like, it was like a, it hit the right level, for me, in terms of, all these elements that we had talked through, like, it, things I normally don't like, it was able to turn them in ways that I've actually enjoyed. So,
and I know I'm in the minority of this. So one of the things that's, fun, for the Steam, version of Amnesia is, like, you get to see the global achievement ranks, and, like, just completing the first puzzle, not even, like, the first act, but just, like, the first puzzle of, like, making the acid in the laboratory has less 16.9 completion rate. Amazing. And the one for, let's see, Nope, which is left when things were getting interesting in Amnesia, is 21.2%. So, like, to you, like, basically all F4 out of this game has less than a quarter of players have been brave enough to get that far into it, and less than one in five have even, like, done the first puzzle. Like, this is, I think, a very deeply terrifying game for a lot of people, and it's, I don't know, it's kind of like, going back to, like, I don't always play games right, or, like, I play them in a different way where I kind of gamify it too much. And I think the developers know that, because this game starts with a message of, like, hey, don't worry about saving, don't worry about, like, other video game stuff like that. Just play the game, engage with the game. And, you know, if I had taken that to heart more, I think those aspects would have been more scary than annoying at times for me. But I don't know. It's just, like, it's fun. Like, let's see, I think, like, 5% of people who buy this game beat this game. Oh, 6.1%.
Nuts. Can we also say that this game is ultimately, at its core, Monsters, Inc.? It's the same fucking thing. Like, it's the same thing. We have people harvesting fear from other beings, concentrating it down and using it as a resource. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Like, it's as Monsters, an energy Inc. source, yeah.
It's Monsters, Inc. This game is Monsters, Inc. Oh. Now, I want to see a mod of this game where you play as Sully.
And the monsters are all Mike Wazowski.
Exactly. Well, Jake, you got anything else on this one before we get into our ratings here?
No, not really. I just, like, it's a very, like, low bullshit kind of puzzle game. Like, yeah, a lot of those other point and clicks, there's like a high amount of BS, but like this one kind of tracks. Like, there weren't many times where it's like, wait, what am I supposed to do? Or I think there was only one time in the sewers where you're like supposed to like break off a pipe by like grabbing it and like jostling it up and down, and it's like that's like the first time in the game that you do something like that. And when I was first presented with it, I'm like, well, I gotta find the thing to break the pipe off instead of like just manually manipulating with it. But yeah, usually like it's pretty intuitive what you're supposed to do. Like the one that like satisfied me a lot is when you go in the like the cistern and you lower a couple of bridges, but like one of them gets stuck. It's like, oh man, you gotta dislodge it, and there's a bunch of like rocks just scattered around. It's like, I wonder if I can just like chuck a rock up there and knock it loose. And I did that, and like, oh, nice, awesome. Like it's puzzles can be very satisfying in that way. And since the puzzles are the only way for you to regain your sanity, like it's also mechanically satisfying in that, like, all right, like there's no more like bugs crawling on my screen, or it's just like I now have more of that to work with. And yeah, the dread of running low on lantern fuel, or of managing that sanity resource of like, well, I gotta hide and it's gotta be dark so I can hide, and like, don't look at the monster, and like, is it gone yet? Like, I can't really peek too much because I don't have too much sanity to work with. It's a good resource management.
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad you brought this up, because I forgot to bring this up earlier, but like, I really do like the little survival bits in this game. I usually don't like that stuff, but like you said, searching for oil, like when you're low on oil, that tension, I really like that. And then like finding the tinder pouches, like there was a time where it's like, I have all these tinder pouches and I don't know what to do with them, or like, this doesn't seem useful to me. But there was a couple of times where I ran out of oil, and it was very lucky that I was able to like tinder pouch a couple of things and like keep a room lit for myself, you know? Mm-hmm. It was good. I really, that tension and the tiny bit of tactics you have to think about, or like the strategy, I guess, or you have to think about, like, do I use oil versus a tinder pouch for this room? You know, like that little bit was like enough for me, you know, like that was just enough. And one other thing I wanted to call out is that like items in the world that you can interact with were usually very clear. You know, they had like a blue sheen to them most of the time. There were times that, kind of like what you had mentioned with the pipe, where you had to like kind of jar it back and forth to interact with it. You know, things like that typically weren't as clearly communicated, like a crank that you'd go back, like spin around. Like, it's fairly intuitive that that's how you would interact with it. But there were a couple of different times where certain items, you're able to interact with them, but it wasn't immediately clear to me that you were able to do stuff to them. So it's like, that could have been a little bit clearer. But overall, I thought it was that visual language is pretty clear. But yeah, Jake, I am shocked. I really am. I am shocked. But this is a, hey, I like that game for me. I came into this thinking, like, I probably will not like it. It's an adventure game. But I think I liked it. Like, now, do I want to go play all the other Amnesia games that came after this? No, I have no interest. Zero. It didn't make me a fan of the genre. But am I glad that I can say I've played Amnesia now? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, hey, I like that game.
That's a very good way of describing it. I think it is a hey, I like that game too. And yeah, the way you're talking about it, it's like, yeah, I'm not gonna play the other games. Like, this game was actually got an update on Steam. I think it's like added like total mod support, and then like a part of that, there was a trailer for I think the most recent Amnesia game, Bunker, which looks like you do like have a gun in that. I'm not sure if you use it to like fight off monsters or like for puzzle stuff. Then the trailer just like shows you shooting off a lock. I don't want to play a Machine for Pigs. I don't want to play the Bunker. I don't want to play other like adventure puzzle games like this. But I don't know. I didn't not enjoy my time playing this. I didn't really play it for long stretches except for like at the end to just finish it off. Like I would kind of play it for like 30 minutes and then like, okay, I'm getting a little too stressed out by this. So like, let me like switch to BioShock for a little bit. But yeah, I'm glad I have played it. And, you know, it's a, I think, a more fun game to like reminisce about and like, yeah, remember those key moments and kind of forget about those annoyances. So, and it's just like it's an indie game that I'm glad it exists. It is like made well. Like there's really good like doling out of resources. Like you're always kind of struggling to have enough to get by, but you can't like lock yourself out of a victory in the same way you could in like Resident Evil 1, where like my first playthrough of that, I fucked up and I used too many bullets and then I couldn't progress anymore because I just didn't have the resources to do that. Like that doesn't happen in this game. It's very well constructed, and I'm not sure how big the team is, but it was probably a small team. It's cool. I'm glad it exists. Hey, I like that game. But yeah, maybe next Halloween I'll pick something where we can shoot people, not people, monsters.
Hopefully next Halloween I get a pick. That's what I would like. I've got a good one. I've got a good one here, but that will be for another day. But Jake, do you want to know about the next game we're going to play? Speaking of other games.
Absolutely.
All right, so folks, and Jake, we have our charity stream coming up November 18th and 19th, so just a couple of weeks away from now. And as per usual, we like to have a block of the podcast or a block of the charity stream dedicated to the next game for our podcast. So I've put a lot of time and effort thinking into what this game will be. This next game is a game that is very near and dear to my heart that I am very curious what you will think about this game. It is something that I have wanted to do some sort of content on for the longest time, and I'm glad we're finally getting to it. Jake, the next episode of Hey, I Like That Game, we will be playing the Tony Special, Monster Rancher 2 for the PlayStation 1, I guess, and PC. Like, we're going to be playing the re-release. The Steam re-release came out not too long ago, put 1 and 2 into one package. So we're going to be playing that on stream. But yeah, Monster Rancher, buddy, we're going back to it. We haven't been to Monster Rancher for a very long time, remember?
Not since Card Battler 2 or whatever.
Yeah, I am really stuck on the sequels to Monster Rancher games. We're not going to be playing any of the original ones. It's never the first one. It's always the second. Yes, Monster Rancher 2 will be next. We will be playing it on stream. We're actually going to be trying to get both of us playing it at the same time. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have like two different games happening on the stream. And then hopefully, I don't know how all the logistics can work, but we might be able to do some battles between you and I, between our raised monsters. Maybe we'll do something like we'll start raising a monster at the same time, give it an hour, and then we'll fight each other or something like that. I don't know.
I'd be down. I might have played this game or like watched a buddy play this game. So we'll see. We'll see if this jogs any memories or if it's was something completely different. But no, I always appreciate when I get to engage with your weird anime games that you played back when I was like just playing Star Fox 64 on repeat.
Yeah. Like Monster, like this is. Monster Rancher 2 is one of those games that, like, when we initially talked about what this show was going to be, instantly leaped into mind of, like, I played hundreds of hours of this game. Like, me and some of my buddies in, like, grade school and in high school, really, we played a lot of this game. And I know there's definitely flaws in it. I can remember some very glaring flaws just from when I was younger, but I really have not booted these games up in close to a decade, probably longer. So I'm very, very curious to see how they play now. And especially with somebody like you who have like really don't have much of a touch base to the series. I'm excited.
Hell yeah. Well, you can check that out on the charity stream, November 18th. Noon Pacific time to November 19th noon. You can email us any questions, comments, considerations. Hey, I like that game at gmail.com. If you're a real sicko, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook.
Yeah, we don't really do much with those anymore.
No, we're at like that game. I think I need to give my wife control over our Twitter account. I haven't even checked it out, and she would be willing to be on social media in a way that Tony and I just don't want to be.
Don't care. But yeah, check out the charity stream. It's coming up soon. It's always a great time. We've got a ton of cool prizes. And Jake, I actually have an extra prize that I added to our thing because I won something at work, so I can give that away. So yeah, be on the lookout for that stuff, folks. Bunch of cool prizes. Lots of fun.
Tell all your friends about the charity stream. Check it out. Go into NAMI. We are less than $400 from having raised $10,000 in total for NAMI. So hoping and expecting to get to that. But it's just, yeah, good times. And I'm glad we get to use our tiny platform to do some good. Actually big good, considering, you know, our reach or lack thereof. I think we've proven that our fan base is quite mighty.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. So thank you for all y'all who have donated. Thank you for all the people that are going to donate in the future. It's going to be great. I'm super excited. We've got some really fun stuff planned for that evening. So definitely check it out. Hey, I like that game.com. We'll be forwarding to that location. So definitely check out that. So yeah. Is that it, Jake? Is that all of our housekeeping?
Hey, twitch.tv/hey, I like that game is where our Twitch is. You know, at the site's going to redirect to it. I have the intention. We'll see if I have the follow through of doing some of streaming beforehand too. Friend of the show, BK, has requested I do some Emerald Run Rogues on stream so he could check it out.
That could be fun.
Might be throwing some of those on stream before we do our charity stream, but I think, yeah, other than that, live life passionately.
Love each other unconditionally.
And play video games.
Thanks, everybody.
I had to think about it when we switch up the order. It's like, oh, I never learned Tony's line.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like the show, please give us a rating and review on whatever platform you're listening to this on. You know, every little bit helps. #propagate the pod.